just want to release a word to you that the Lord gave me this week. It started out one way, and then it's kind of morphed into something else. And I love it when God does that, because He grows stuff and He develops it. In my head all week, I was texting a brother, and I text in that text, the phrase "a heart set in motion" came in, and so I put that. I said the world's wanting to see a heart set in motion. So often we've looked and we'll see, and we'll say this about ourselves or somebody: well, they got a good heart and all of that. That's great, man. That's awesome. But if it's not set in motion, if it's not set in motion, and the biggest fear in my life, y'all have heard me say this before, the biggest fear in my life is not that, you know, it's not economic certainty or uncertainty. It's not health uncertainty, and that's a little more realistic today. You know, as I'm getting older, I'm about to, you know, get out of my 50s, and you sit and look, and you start seeing different things with your body, and you just don't, you know, it's you don't bounce back as quick and all of that stuff, and you get a little arthritic things and all that. And so, if we allowed it to, that could scare us. We see our peers, you know, being buried, and that would scare us. That's not my big fear. My big fear is living a life that does not go into everything, that does not become everything that God intended it for it to be. Randy, my biggest fear is that my life would fall short of His dreams for my life. Not that my dreams would be small, but that my life would fall short of His dreams for my life. And so I've always said, man, I just want my life, and I want my heart to be a heart set in motion. I think that's what the world's looking for. I think that's what's attractive to the world. But God kind of changed this title of this, and it's more of a stuck in the middle sermon. Because I think what happens to us is we get stuck in the middle of good, and we fail to ever come out of that. And so I want us to look at Moses and just talk about him for a few moments. Y'all remember Marty and Krista this morning? They're in Wisconsin, in Madison, Wisconsin, speaking at a church. They got an invitation to go up there. So excited for them. They were excited about it and a little bit nervous and all that. So we just declare uniqueness and authority and authenticity over them. I said, brother, just you're authentic, so just release authenticity. Release your authenticity, the ministry's authenticity. So they're up there this morning. We're going to be in Hebrews 11, if you will, turn there. Once again, let God determine the scope of your life, but you determine the depth of your life. I look at Moses and his life, and Moses, we all should be pretty familiar. I shouldn't assume that, but Moses lives a very familiar life to many of us. He was one of the first biblical characters that I got to know, and that was through when I was a kid. They used to play the Ten Commandments all the time on TV, you know, and you didn't have all of the you know, movie channels and 100 different things. You know, you had 2, 5, and 11. I remember we all got excited when 17 came on board. And y'all don't even know what I'm talking about right now. It's how Ted Turner got rich. Okay. But on 2, 5, and 11, they would periodically play these great classic movies. And I remember the Ten Commandments always just captured my imagination, and Moses and this giant figure of a man that he was and all of this. But Moses was a man that had a couple huge crossroads in his life. And everything about his future and everything about his destiny hinged. The linchpin of his life was how he responded to these two great crossroads in his life. Moses' life, as Stephen says in Acts chapter 7, Stephen was preaching to the Pharisees and all of these guys right before they stoned him. You know, be careful what you preach, because it might get you stoned, but that's okay. You just preach what's right. And so he comes in and he's declaring about Moses and talking about him. And basically he says, you know, Moses' life is divided up into 3 40-year chapters. And without getting into the book of Exodus, we could go to Exodus 3, and I encourage you to do so later on. But go to Exodus 3 and just reread the story of Moses' life. He was born, obviously, a Hebrew in Egypt when they were in captivity. At the time, the Jews had become so big and were becoming a potentially powerful force. They were beginning to outnumber the Egyptians, that Pharaoh got nervous about the potential of what the Hebrews could become. And so he sent out this edict, and he said, let's all kill all of the male boys of a certain age. And so they basically, he authorized an infanticide where they go in and they kill all the kids. And they kill all the sons, much like Herod did in the New Testament with Jesus. You know, he tried to have him killed because he was worried about the coming king. Pharaoh was worried, so he sends this edict out, and they kill all of these boys of a certain age, hence trying to eliminate a generation of men that could be a fighting force used against them. And so this was going on. Moses, the word says that Moses' parents hid him for 3 months. And at the end of 3 months, they said they couldn't hide him any longer. So they, and we'll read a little bit of this in Scripture. They couldn't hide him any longer, so they put him in the basket made out of the reeds and pitched with tar. And they put him in the Nile River. And it was right at where Pharaoh's daughter and her court and all of that, the proximity of where they put it, was where they would go down to bathe and do things at the river. So basically Moses' little basket, it comes out and it gets in close enough to where one of Pharaoh's daughters saw this, or Pharaoh's daughter saw this. And so they got it and she took the baby as her own. Jewish tradition, Jewish history says that Pharaoh's daughter was his only child, and that she had no children. So Moses was in line to become the next Pharaoh. That's what Jewish history says. That's what Stephen's pulling off of, is that she had no son and Pharaoh had no grandchildren. So guess who gets to step in? It's Moses. And so that gives you a little bit of backdrop, but God had a bigger plan for him than just being Pharaoh over Egypt. And so let's just start in. We're going to be in verse 23 in the book of Hebrews 11. It said, faith prompted, remember we're in the faith chapter, faith prompted the parents of Moses at his birth to hide him for 3 months. That's why they were hiding him, because they realized their child was exceptional and they refused to be afraid of the king's edict. Faith enabled Moses to choose God's will, for although he was raised as the son of Pharaoh's daughter, he refused to make that his identity, choosing instead. I like that. It said that he refused to make that his identity. One of the biggest things that culture will try to do is place what they deem acceptable identity on you and on our kids. Not just our kids, guys. It's on us. They will try to stamp what they feel like our identity should look like on us and shame us if we don't look like that. They want you to think a certain way. They want you to act a certain way. They want you to believe a certain way. And I'm not talking about politics here, guys. I'm talking about our value system. I'm talking about our faith system. I'm talking about, you know, it's, let's face it, it ain't sexy to be a Christian anymore in America. You know, they come in and they, you really believe in a virgin birth? I thought you were educated, Brett House. You really believe God still does miracles? You know, some people don't want to sing the songs that when I open my mouth, miracles jump out. Because that puts a false expectation out there on believers and all of this stuff. And so there's a dumbing down of our faith. And it's because society says this is what we're supposed to look like. There's a, they almost look at, if you come in our children and we teach purity and all of this stuff, and they look at that and they're like, oh my gosh, that's so antiquated. The natural thing now is to have many sexual partners and to live with people before you marry them and all of that. That's the norm in culture and society. I'm not big on jokes, but I'll do a little bit of Bill Johnson right here. I heard something this week, and it just cracked me up, and it fits in what I'm talking about. It was Christine Kane. I was listening to her preach this week, and she was talking about her husband. And all you guys with daughters, y'all will appreciate this. And she said, you know, when my daughter was in high school, and there's this little boy that was wanting to date her. And so he said, Christine said that we got our personal assistant to schedule an appointment. We got him to come into our office and my husband's office, not me, but come into my husband's office and come down. And he said he had this conversation with the young man, and he was, had all of these statistics prepared and all this stuff. And he said, you know, son, that we put predators in prison for a living. You know, we fight against human trafficking and all of this. He said, you know, that's what we do. And then he comes in and he tells him, he says, here are the statistics that of all of the high school people that date, the high school sweethearts that date, there's a 98.3 or 98.4% probability that you will not get married. So there's only 1.6% chance that you're actually going to marry my daughter. So the purpose of this meeting is not to us come in and become friends. He said the real purpose of this meeting, he said, is I want to know how you are going to date another man's wife. And I'm like, man, that's good. How are you going to date another man's wife? Is it going to be with honor? Is it going to be with integrity? Is it going to be in character? Is it going to be all of these things? And I thought that was cool as snot, man. I wish I'd have known that when Brett and Rhett came around. But they stuck. So the others before Rhett that came around, not Daryl, you know. Papa told Daryl one time, said, you know, you got to kiss a few frogs before you find your prince. So. Coming out of Papa. Come on, don't be a sore loser. Sucks being a preacher's daughter sometimes, right? But the word in here said he refused to make that his identity. He refused to make that his identity. Choosing instead to suffer mistreatment with the people of God. Moses preferred faith certainty. I absolutely love that statement right there. Moses preferred faith certainty. On the surface in the world would tell us faith is anything but certain. But my experience with my God and that he determines the scope of my life, it tells me that it's a sure thing. I'm confident in this thing, and Moses chose that, and confident being, you know what, I'm a Hebrew and I'm not an Egyptian, and I was raised in the house of Pharaoh. If you study and you go to Acts 7, and we won't there for time's sake, but when Stephen was preaching, it said that Moses grew up in Pharaoh's household, in Pharaoh's court, and he had every bit of instruction and teaching and knowledge and understanding the best that Egypt could offer at the time. And the word says that he chose a different identity. He said, I choose to be a Hebrew instead of an Egyptian. And so he has this big crossroads right here. It said, Moses preferred faith certainty above the momentary enjoyment of sin's pleasures. He found his true wealth in suffering abuse for being anointed. More than in anything else, more than in anything the world could offer him. For his eyes looked with wonder not on the immediate, but on the ultimate, faith's great reward. Holding faith's promise, Moses abandoned Egypt and had no fear of Pharaoh's rage because he persisted in faith as if he had seen God who is unseen. Moses passed the test. He got it right. He made the right choice. That was the first big crossroads in his life. Am I a Hebrew or an Egyptian? You guys, and I would probably be pretty safe in saying the vast, vast majority of people in the room, you've made that decision. You've come in and you've accepted Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior. Every week when I come in here and preach, I'm not preaching super evangelical to a crowd that I think needs to make a decision to follow Jesus. Because you've already said, yes, I accept him. I received him. I know what he's done on the cross for me, what he did for the cross for me. And I received that. And I've asked him to forgive me. My name is written in the Lamb's Book of Life. That's why I don't have to come in here and preach heaven every week. Maybe I need to do it a little bit more. I'm not preaching heaven every week. It's not the first crossroad that concerns me for this body of people. It's the second crossroads that concerns me for this body. Because we get stuck in the right decision of the first crossroads. Turn real quickly to Acts 7. Acts 7. We're in the Passion Translation. In verse 23, it says, when Moses turned 40, as I said a while ago, his life was broken up into three segments of 40. When he turned 40, his heart was stirred for his people, the Israelites, because they were in bondage under this Pharaoh. They were in bondage. And then it goes on to tell one day, let me just read it real quickly. One day he saw one of our people being violently mistreated, so he came to his rescue. And with his own hands, Moses murdered the abusive Egyptian. Justice, right? Moses hoped that when the people realized how he had rescued one of their own, they would recognize him as their deliverer. How wrong he was. The next day he came upon two of our people engaged in a fist fight, and he tried to break it up, saying, men, you are brothers. Why would you want to hurt each other? But the perpetrator pushed Moses aside and said, who do you think you are? Who appointed you to be our ruler and judge? Are you going to kill me like you did the Egyptian yesterday? Verse 29, shaken by this, Moses fled Egypt and lived as an exile in the land of Midian, where he became the father of two sons. And then it says, after 40 years had passed, while he was in the desert near Mount Sinai, the messenger of Yahweh appeared to him in the midst of a flaming thorn bush. So get this picture right here. Moses spent the first 40 years in Egypt in royalty. Adopted into royalty, educated, ate just the best life, guys. And he said, this is not who I am. I choose something else. Applaud him for it. Awesome. Amazing. First step. You can't get to God without that step. You can't get to God without that step. You have to make that decision. I have decided to follow Jesus. And you die and let him come in and give you new life. But that thrust him into a place of, because of the circumstances here, he had to flee Egypt. Now, Hebrews said that he wasn't afraid of the wrath of Pharaoh and all of these things. But at the end of the day, he wound up and found himself in the land of Midian. And he had great circumstances in Midian. He got there and guess who he met? The daughters of a mighty wealthy prince of Midian. They were nomadic, but everybody was nomadic there. He had herds, he had flocks, he had land that they covered. You know, I'm not saying that he owned it, but it was a territory that he could freely use. And so Moses comes into this place and he says, you know what? I don't need Egypt. This is pretty doggone good. He met the love of his life, I'm assuming. He had sons. He was in charge of the flocks of the prince of the area. So he changed this life for this life. And in my mind, and I know by looking at the spiritual realm, you know what he did? He traded up. I have met very, 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 very few people. Nobody that would really speak out of the abundance of their heart said, I wish I'd never accepted Jesus. I'm going back to the world. Now, they get missing the things of the world, and sometimes they'll go back to the things of the world. But I don't think anybody that would give me an absolute, total, honest answer said, I regret the day I accepted Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior. Because it brings you into a place of peace. It brings you into a place of hope. It brings you into a place of love. It brings you into a place of family. It brings you into a place of unity with God. All of these things. And we're like, man, that's what we're looking for, right? But that's where we get stuck. After 40 years of this, I mean, it's a much more idyllic lifestyle for me. I mean, Michaela, I would trade that in a heartbeat. Man, I got flocks and herds, and I'm up in the mountains, and I'm, you know, with my family, and I ain't dealing with all the politics and the pressure and all the junk that goes on with Egypt and whatever the cities were at that time and all of this stuff. You know what? I'm out here, and it's just me doing my thing and all that stuff, and that's good. And if we're not careful, we will get caught up, and we'll get hung up in that place where I said, everything's good with me. And we'll stop at the overlook at Yosemite. And I've stood there. And I've took pictures there. And I'm like, wow. I'm not Yosemite, Grand Teton. At Grand Teton, I've stood in that spot. And I've took pictures. And I said, wow, that's awesome. That's amazing and all that stuff. And we could get hung up in that. And the whole time God's saying, let me draw you into more.
Let me draw you into deeper. Let me draw you into a greater purpose, a greater plan. Let me draw you into my dreams for your life, not your dreams. I've always said that my dreams are far less than what his dreams are. I've always said that my dreams for my children and my dreams for my grandchildren probably supersede their dreams because they, you know, as parents and as grandparents, we think larger. And I guarantee you they think larger for their children and they will think larger for their grandchildren. I know that. I know that. And so he's coming in and he's all of a sudden, God calls him up. I think I stopped short of this. It says, Moses was astonished and stunned by what he was seeing, so he drove closer to observe this marvel. Then the Lord Yahweh spoke to him out of the flames, out of this burning bush. He said, I'm the living God, the God of your ancestors. I'm the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Trembling in God's presence and overwhelmed with awe, Moses didn't even dare to look into the fire. And out of the flames, the Lord Yahweh said to him, take the sandals off your feet. You are standing in the realm of holiness. I've watched and seen how my people have been mistreated in Egypt. I've heard their painful groaning, and now I've come down to set them free. So come to me, Moses, for I am sending you to Egypt to represent me. How heavy is that? You got a good life, Eric. I mean, don't we get into this Christianity thing to give us a good marriage and a good family and peace of soul and peace of mind? He said, yeah, but there's more. Because this thing about relationship, this thing about covenant is trying to push you, is trying to call you, is trying to draw you into more. It's trying to draw you off the overlook. And so all of a sudden, Moses finds himself at another crossroads. God, I got it pretty good here. Stephen says it's a pretty cut and dry thing that God sent him, but you study the book of Exodus chapter 3, and there was a lot of back and forth going on. Moses was like, them jokers, the last time I saw was in Egypt. They was trying to kill me. They didn't know nobody going to receive me. My own people didn't even receive me. They rejected me as judge and ruler over them, the Hebrews. Then he comes in and he said, I can't speak plainly. He says, I'm slow of speech. He had all these reasons and all these excuses. You know what mine always were? It's not the right season of my life. I know ain't none of y'all ever used that excuse, have you? Do you know it ain't going to be convenient for y'all to take Jace to Honduras next week? Y'all going to have to get up at like 4 a.m., drive to the airport, and deal with all the hassles of the airport. That's after you carry me to get a COVID test on Saturday. And you're going to deal with all of those hassles. And then you're going to do the going through Miami Airport, which is a zoo more often than not. And you're going to have to change planes and connect. And then you're going to go down and you're going to be in a third world country. And you're going to be, you know, by the end of the trip, you'll be like, man, I'm great with rice and beans. I'm really good. I promise you, we won't cook you rice and beans when we get back. There's nothing convenient about it. And you come in and you say, man, and you know what the easy thing to do is say, man, it's not the right season for me. It's not the right season for me. Biggest regret in my life was saying no because of seasonality up to this point. It's not the right season. Too busy with this, and I'm too busy with that, and too busy with business, too busy with sports with the kids, too busy with all of these things. And I did not realize it, but the whole time I was standing in a realm of holiness. And God was handing me an invitation instead of an inconvenience. And I'm like, God, if I do this, you know what kind of inconvenience this is going to be? He said, you're standing in a realm of holiness. And I did not realize, but I was stood in many crossroads through the years. And you know what? Typically what I usually chose? Matt, usually I chose Midian. Because I said, Midian's good. Midian's way better than Egypt. Midian is safe. Ain't nobody trying to kill me. Ain't nobody throwing rocks at me. So I choose Midian. And you know where I feel like that the church has been stuck for a long time? In Midian. We hadn't been stuck in Egypt. We left Egypt. We did good on that. Good job. We got out of Egypt. We sing about it every week. You know? No longer slaves. But we're sitting, enjoying our life in Midian while the rest of the world is still in bondage in their Egypt. He said, I called you more than just to be a prince of Midian. I called you to be a deliverer. Is a prince of Midian a cool? That's awesome, man. That's good. But the reality is, there's still a world of slaves that are in Egypt. And so he brings us to this invitation. He brings us to this crossroad, and he asks us, he said, will you go? I've heard their cries, and I want to send somebody out. Will you go? And so Moses, and we don't see it in Hebrews 11, and we don't see it in Hebrews 7, because that we're getting God's perspective in Hebrews 11 and Hebrews 7. And God was like, I knew I had him all along, but because I knew who Moses was, I knew he would say yes. You know, the word says that later on in Exodus, it said that the children of Israel knew the acts of God, but Moses knew the ways of God. That means he had an intimate relationship with him. He got off the overlook. Somewhere in Midian, he got off the overlook. So when God comes to him on the mount of the back of Mount Sinai, Mount Horeb, he comes in and he says, here's the burning bush, let me talk to you and all of this stuff. Moses already had a level of relationship, I believe, by spending, like David, days in the sheep field and the herd field with God and communing with him, trying to figure out his whole life. God, this is a crazy life I've lived. He knew who his family was. He knew about his brother Aaron. I don't know how old Aaron was, but Aaron was. He knew about his brother Aaron because God said, I'm going to send your brother Aaron to you. He's a good speaker. God started removing all his excuses, and if we will allow him to, God will remove all of our excuses. Well, I can't do this, and I can't do that, and I can't do this, and I can't do that. It's economically out of my reach, or it's this out of my reach, or it's this out of my reach, or it's this out of my reach. I love what he told Moses. He said, when y'all leave Egypt, he said, you ain't going out empty. He said, you're going to find favor, and the spoils of Egypt are going out with you. So don't worry about going out and not me not funding this thing. I will fund this thing. He's just waiting for our yes on how big is our yes. And you know, we say, well, what does that look like, Brother Sid? It looks like different things. I can look around this room right now, and I'm just moved by this room. There are several you guys, several families in this room. You know what? You've adopted people. You've adopted kids. You know, TJ, Lisa, I applaud y'all and Anthony, because it's, you know, y'all supposed to be about where we are right now, and y'all got a middle schooler. And it ain't always easy, is it? Shane and Karen and Sharon and all of these people. And man, so just, that you know what that was? That was a crossroads, and you had a choice to make. I can go deeper in this thing, or I can say Midian's okay. I pray for you. I write a check for you. But there's something about going back in. And we've got all these crossroads. And there are these huge monumental moments in our life that are going to determine the trajectory of our life. And we look at it and we're like, oh my gosh, this is too heavy for me and all this. And God says, this is an invitation. This is an invitation into something, into a realm of holiness. And I'm afraid, I know, I'm convinced, because I have been there, is we get stuck in Midian. And God does not want, and I do not want you guys to be trapped in the middle.
I'll go back to the word that James shared a while ago, which was such a weighty word. And when we're in places like this, whether it's Grand Teton or Yellowstone or Yosemite or any of these places that are majestic and full of grandeur and all that stuff, you typically see two types. Well, you see three types because we're in the middle. But you'll see one type, and you know what it does? It pulls up on a big Greyhound bus, and 50 people get out. And they've got their cameras. And they start taking a few pictures, and after 5 minutes, they jump back in the bus, and they go to the next overlook. And then you'll see another group of people, and they'll let down the tailgate on their truck and pop up the little camper shell top, and they'll get out their little burner, and they'll start cooking breakfast on their little burner. That's the guys that are sleeping in the back of their truck, and they're about to hike back in there, and they're about to see everything and experience everything and all of that stuff. And that's the two types of people. Usually we're in between. But spiritually, that's the two types of people that we see, that we are, that we become. And you can get on the, I'm going to go here for just a second. You can get on the nice new bougie tour bus with the awesome tour guide that can tell you everything about it because he's seen it 1,000 times, and you walk away and you can say, I've been there. Or you can experience it yourself. And we want to be around all the Christian rock stars and all of that stuff. And God says, I want you to be the guy that rolls up the camper shell. Listen, there ain't nothing sexy about no camper shell on somebody's truck when you flip it up. And I'm sorry, that ain't, you know, the girl's like, you better not never get a camper shell on your truck, Dad. Because that looks like Pawpaw. That's the guys that can't afford the bands that you and Marty's lusting after, James. The 100,000 adventure vans. But you know who sees it better than anybody? Because I watched one of those guys one day, and he was sitting down by a stream with a camera taking pictures of ducks in the water. He had these mallards and all these ducks, and they were in there preening their feathers and doing all their splashing, and it was early in the morning, and they'd come swooping in and all that stuff. And the guy sat there, and you could tell he was just going to do it for hours. Because later on, I came back by, and you know, he was at his little camper shell thing with, you know, whooping up breakfast and all of this stuff, and he'd been there. He says, I'm camping out for the shot. I'm immersing myself into it because you know what? In a little while, there's going to be a moose that's going to walk through this meadow, and I'm going to be sitting there with my camera ready, and I'm going to get a picture of that moose, and I'm going to see it up close. And if all I'm doing is hitting an overlook and whipping out a camera and taking two clicks and jumping back in the bus and going, I am living my life by happenstance. I'm living it by chance. And God said, Moses, I'm inviting you in to something that is, you notice the wording in some of this that we've been reading right here, that Moses saw it through the eyes of wonder. He looked at it through the eyes of wonder. And he looked at the certainty of faith. I know this, what this is going to be. I don't know what it's going to look like, but I know where it's going. Here's a problem I have, and I'm going to wrap things up with this, but here's a problem I have. I love GPS. I think it's awesome. You give me an address and I can get there. It'll also give me about 3 alternative routes that I can take to get there. The thing that I don't like about GPS is it doesn't show me the whole picture. It'll show me the 3 alternate routes, but once I pick which alternate route I'm going to take, and me and Lori are going down the road, it will tell me what's coming up next, but it doesn't tell me anything beyond that. And I'm like, I know I'm turning right in a mile on State Route 43. But I want to know what it's going to look like after I make that turn. What's my next turn coming up? It doesn't give you that. At least in my simple understanding of it. Again, I drive Lori crazy. I'm like, what's next? He said, I don't know. It ain't told me yet. And I get frustrated. I'm like, what? The same way, Brett, with type A's. I want to know four turns down the road which way I'm going, because I'm mapping it out in my mind. This is the way it's supposed to look. And we do that with God. We say, God, I want to know in advance, because I'm a big planner, and I want to know in advance what are all the turns and routes that I'm going to take to get there. I know what this final destination, I have an idea of where we're going in this thing, but I want to know all the different turns and what roads and what route I'm taking. And God said, all you need to know is where the next turn is. Just trust me. See, here's the bad thing about me. I bet there's probably three or four of y'all I could lump into the same category. I don't trust a GPS. Because I will have in my head where I think this is supposed to be, and it'll be taking me somewhere. And you know what I'll tell Lori? I'll say, that ain't right. Anybody else? I'll say, I know. You was one of the three or four I was thinking about in my mind. I said, this ain't right. She said, will you trust it? I said, it ain't right. It don't look right. This just ain't right. Because in my mind, I was supposed to be this way. She said, it might be taking you. And sometimes it'll carry you doggone pig trail. Beware of some of them shortcuts. But it gets you there. And my point in that is we get stuck in the middle because of all those things. We get stuck in the middle because that overlooked view is pretty doggone good. We get stuck in the middle because it's easier for me to get on a tour bus than it is to get my little camper shell in my little truck and to pull out here and pull out my Bunsen burner and cook breakfast and sit there all day with the expectation that I'm going to see this. And I immerse myself. It costs a lot to immerse yourself into something. It costs a lot. It's inconvenient to immerse yourself into something. To go where that picture of the Grand Teton was showing a while ago and the Snake River in the forefront, to go back in there, it cost you something. It is inconvenient, but it's glorious. And so the question that God has for us this morning, and not just this morning, but the question God has for us in this season right now, I don't mean just in Victory Fellowship. I believe in the church, the thing that he has for us right now is, are you satisfied being in Midian? Or do you believe there's more? It's cool where you are right now, man. It really is. But everything within me screams that this ain't all there is for you, for your life. And here's what we do is we will go to a different geographic spot in Midian, but we won't leave Midian. So you can hop from here and go somewhere else, but if you don't want to get out of Midian, you're still in Midian. Midian was a big place. So, man, I'm feeling a little uncomfortable. God's kind of pushing me, and I just don't know about this. You know what? If Moses had said that he was on the backside, you read in Exodus, and it says he was on the backside, all right? If he'd have left and went to the front side, you know what he would have found? He would have been in a realm of holiness because God would have been there too. And Brother Keith had been asking him the same question. He's saying, will you go to Egypt and be a deliverer? Will you make a difference? Will you be a kingdom man? Will you be an unafraid, unapologetic kingdom man in Carrollton school system? Will you be an unapologetic, unafraid kingdom man at Cargill? And in Victory Fellowship Church. Man, you're around all types, Eric. You're around people with stupid amount of wealth, the business world, and just regular guys that drive nails for a living. Will you be an unapologetic kingdom man? Unwavering kingdom man. One thing that I found, and this is recently, guys, this is just recently. Is people are hungry for something that's authentic and real. And fulfilling in life. I was having a conversation 2 days ago with a gentleman. And he's a successful businessman. He'd just got back from a week heliskiing in Canada. We were talking about that for a minute. And we were talking about timing on some stuff. I said, man, I'm going to be out of town the week after next. I'm going to be in Honduras on a mission trip. He asked me 50 questions about that. He said, that's what I need to be doing. He said, I need to be doing something that's fulfilling. That was his words, not mine. He said, he just dropped $2,000 a day on helicopter skin. Kind of cheap, I thought. $2,000 a day on helicopter skin. He said, I need to be doing something that's fulfilling. I want to talk to you more about this. I got teenage kids. I want to talk to you more about that. The world's looking for that. They're looking for Jacob to be authentic and real kingdom man and saying, this is what Midian propels you into. Midian's great. That overlook is awesome. But you know what it is? It's a launching point into more. You said yes to the first phase. Will you say yes to the second phase? That first phase is a launching point. I'm pretty sure it's in John. It says, to as many as received him, to them he gave power to become the sons of God. He said, when you receive me and you say yes and you ask me to come in, you know what that does? That gives you the power to become a son. The power to do more than Midian. You'll get equipped in Midian. You'll find a wife in Midian. I'm not talking. Speaking figuratively. You'll find a wife in Midian. You'll find a family in Midian. You'll find a lot about yourself in Midian. But all that is a launching point into who he wants you to become. And do not, let me throw this out here. We're a young church, but let me throw this out here. Do not say, I'm too old. My season is past. I'll pray for them. Because y'all pray for them with a faith that you don't pray for yourself. You'll pray over your kids' purity. You'll pray over your... And it's not so you won't have headaches when they're teenagers. You believe it for them. And you'll pray over them that they're going to be world changers. You're going to pray over them that they're going to be difference makers. That they're going to be whatever their field they get into. That they are going to be all of these things. And you'll pray that over them, but you don't believe it for your own life. You know why? Because you say, my season's past. And then we'll fall back and say, I wish somebody had prayed that over me. You know when this crossroad happened in Moses' life? Y'all do the math. You know how old he was? 80. Not 40. 40's when he said yes to the first phase. 80 years old. What's that? Dude. I get tired. Get an extra hour of sleep at night, but don't stop. He was 80. Courtney, now's not the time for us to stop. You and Keith's probably, and Terry J's, all y'all a little bit older than me. Now's not the time for us to stop. now is not the time. He was 80. And God said, you ready now? I hope through these years, you've been walking with the Lord for a while. I hope through these years you've gained some insight and wisdom into your relationship with Him and who He is. Now's the time for you to take risk. Because you built a history with Him. Now's the time for you to take risk. It's called faith. We say, man, okay, I've proven this out. Now, I can launch out into some stuff. That's what this story and word about Moses is all about, guys. It's not getting caught in the middle. That's His heart for you. That's His prayer for you. That's His desire for you. I could go on, and we could pull out examples out of this, but I think He said what He's wanting to say this morning to you. You go home and you chew on this, and you ponder on this, and you meditate on this as you're out doing your thing today. And realize that I'm living in a realm of holiness, a kingdom of holiness, a domain of holiness. And that'll change how you approach life. That'll change the way you see things and what you're looking for. Let's stand to our feet. Let God determine the scope of your life, but you determine the depth of your life. Nobody else has the power to do that. Not dysfunctional family, not generational curses. Only you. Not growing up in Podunk, Harrelson County. Man, if I grew up somewhere else. Went to another school. Went to another church. We little old bitty country church. If I'd gone somewhere else, man. I might be on Stephen Furtick's praise and worship team, James. That's awesome for who's on his worship team. It's not a cut on Stephen Furtick. But you're in Bremen. You are here. And you know what God says about here? That you are standing in a realm of holiness. You think about that. The next time you hate on Mayberry. Only old timers. Do you know what that means? Mayberry. Okay, sorry. Y'all enlighten. The next time that you get frustrated with Mayberry, remember what God says about it. This is a realm of holiness. The next time you get bored with your surroundings, this is a realm of holiness. The people God's connected you with, this is a realm of holiness. I meet and talk to some pretty interesting cats, but you know what? I wouldn't trade them for my little group of homies for nothing. I wouldn't. Because most people I talk to long for what we have. Most people I talk to long for what we had Sunday night in life group, Nick. That young man, it was him and his wife came Sunday night. We prayed over them, and Lori had a prophetic word for her. Come in James' office the next day. He says, man, me and my wife, when we went outside, we just got in our car and started crying. You know why? Because they were in a realm of holiness. The world longs for that. That's why they need 5 million likes. I only need one. I just need to be marked by one. Him. When I get marked by Him, God told Moses, He says, man,
He said, the only thing you need to know is I'm going to be with you. If it makes you feel better, I'll bring. Aaron was an add-on because Moses needed some reassurance. God said, we can do this, but if you need that, I'm cool. I'll bring Aaron in on this. We just need that seal of one. That's his seal in our life. That song we sang a while ago, You Love Me As You Find Me. There's one thing that always jumps out to me about that song. Here's what we're at. We're good at believing that you loved me as you found me. But once I get this, I said yes to this Christian thing and I've spent my life living in Midian, I don't know that you still love me as much because I feel like I've been a disappointment to you. Maybe this is a word for somebody right here. He loved me when he was on the cross. He loved me when I was, he loved Brett House when he was in that altar. I remember the day you got saved. He loved you that day. Ooh, man, he loved you that day. But you know what? His love for you burns hotter right now than it did that day. I love the part of that song. It's present tense. You love me as you find me. Cool thing about that burning bush. You know what really caught Moses' eye? It didn't go out. It's not uncommon in the Sinai Peninsula, which is where this is, it is not uncommon for a bush under certain conditions to combust, to catch on fire and burn up. But what is uncommon is the fact that it doesn't go out. What's supernatural is that it doesn't go out. That's his love for you, and that's his call for you. Is that bush is still burning. The fact that you are on a realm of holiness doesn't have a shelf life. No shelf life. No shelf life. No shelf life. It's still burning. Still burning. Y'all run with that. I love you guys. Y'all have an awesome week this week. Youth on the ski trip is going to meet Fellowship Hall, Tyler. Fellowship Hall, as good as any. We'll meet in there and or everybody that's going on the ski trip. Remember, we got one more week of toys that we're going to carry down to Honduras. And, man, I just continue to lift up Ashley Broadstreet and her family. And y'all have an awesome week this week. We love y'all. Y'all go out and just get off the overlook. Venture beyond the overlook. All right? Amen. See you.